Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood's Women's Leadership Circle Luncheon takes place tomorrow, and Michelle Goodwin will be the featured speaker. She's professor at the University of California, Irvine, and is the founder and director of the Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy, and it's internationally praised for her reproductive justice initiative. She's an expert on reproductive justice, health, and human rights, and body autonomy. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Michelle Goodwin to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
A great pleasure to have you, and I thank you. The work you do is important and so fascinating. Give us a sense of when you do events like this, as you'll be doing tomorrow, of what the message you like to get out is.
So I think there are two important messages that we need to pay attention to. One happens to be the human rights of all persons, and as part of the narrative of human rights of all persons, there are certain inalienable rights, and one of the most foundational ones happens to be an individual's own autonomy, that kind of fundamental right that is freedom, right, that no state should have to legislate your freedom. And this is a human right, and we see much of this coming out of Nuremberg and the Nuremberg Code about an individual's autonomy. But it's also important to recognize that there are constitutional rights that are at stake, and that our United States Supreme Court over the last 50 years has made very clear that women have equal rights to men, that women have legal autonomy over their bodies, that women have legal rights of privacy. Now, it may be strange for some of your younger listeners to think, well, wow, that's only been in the last 50 years. Well, then it's important to understand the history of how women have been regarded in our country, and that women have been technically the legal property of their husbands, denied the right to vote, denied the right to sit on juries, even denied the right to become attorneys. So all of these flow together in now understanding the urgency and importance of both a human rights framework and also a legal framework that ensconces women's rights.
When you see a story, and you can help me with this, I'm even hesitant to bring up the Harvey Weinstein story with you, because I don't know if it's something that's like, oh God, you know, this undermines the other work that we are doing, because this then becomes the focal point. But also, it seems to me that it gives you an opportunity to kind of say, well, yeah, this is what we've been talking about all along.
Oh, you are absolutely right. It is part of a legacy. And, you know, when we're clear about understanding the full scope of women, right, and the full scope of a legacy of women in the United States, you know, marital rape was a legal thing. It wasn't until the 1980s that marital rape became a crime, because it was legal for a person to rape a wife, even an estranged wife who was living in another city in another town who had restraining order. That would not lead a prosecutor to bring charges against that man. So it's really important to understand what this legacy of propertizing women's body, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, it actually all flows together. You know, former President Jimmy Carter has said that the most urgent human rights issue of our time is actually paying attention to the sexual abuse of women.
You talk a lot about freedom and what freedom means and what freedom means for women. And I'm interested in your thoughts on that and ultimately how it is obtained.
This is such a great question. Oh, what a wonderful question. And again, thank you for having me on your show. Well, I think it's really important to understand that freedom means something much more than just rights on paper, or kind of rights that are illusory and just in thin air. And one of the analogies that we could think about is that the 13th Amendment abolished slavery in 1865, but we know that the Jim Crow system was absolutely pernicious. Even with the right to vote being granted African Americans by the 15th Amendment, again in the late 1800s, We know that it wasn't until the 1965 Voting Rights Act was enacted that it became real that African Americans in states like Mississippi and Alabama and Arkansas could actually use that right to vote. So when we think about freedom and autonomy, and when we think about women being able to be protected from sexual harassment and abuse, it's more than just having rights on paper. It really means a cultural shift. And it also is a role for law, too. You know, in so many instances, and we've seen this in the Harvey Weinstein case, that women have felt very insecure about reporting, and that even in cases where women have reported, gone to the police, that prosecutors may not have pursued those cases for whatever reasons. And so, you know, a freedom is a state of mind of an entire culture that respects individuals and their society. And I think one of our biggest challenges is actually acknowledging and being honest about the ways in which women actually are not always treated as equal citizens to their male counterparts. And I think that that's a hard thing for us to talk about, but it's important for us to acknowledge.
One of the things that troubled me, or that I don't understand, so I'm going to ask an expert like you to help me try to understand it, given your law background as well, which is that in this Harvey Weinstein case, as compared to the Roger Ailes case, both had a large number of women who came forward and said that there were acts of harassment as well as alleged rape. And there were payouts. There were settlements that were made with those women. The thing that struck me about the Harvey Weinstein case is that many of those settlements were for not nearly the amount of money, where in the Roger Ailes case you're talking about millions of dollars in settlements, where in some of the Harvey Weinstein cases there were, you know, $25,000 to $50,000. I ask the question because that monetization is troubling, isn't it?
Yes. Well, you know, you've touched on something else. You know, when we're talking about the realms of property, property flows also with monetizing people, that people become reduced to monetized values. And this is what makes something like slavery so pernicious in whatever form it is, indentured servitude, explicit slavery, or the kind of quid pro quos or the payoffs for silence. And you're right, you know, you do see a disparity in terms of what these payouts represent. And that's probably because there are other quid pro quos that are at stake, right? So we'll pay you out this, but maybe you'll get this other movie role where, in fact, you'll make more or something right. Like that. You know, it's all horrific and chilling. You know, this is not the society that we aspire to be in. And I think also one of the underlying factors is stigmatization. You know, what makes these types of concerns so challenging for the male and female, and it's important to know that there are male victims of this too, what makes it so challenging is that, you know, one, you know, is concerned about being stereotyped afterwards, stigmatized and shamed. And that's real. I think it's hard for a lot of people in society who are sitting apart from this to appreciate how traumatizing that might be and how it might, in fact, influence one's deep, deep silence, because you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to be ashamed or stereotyped as a troublemaker. And can I add one thing to that, too?
Of course.
You know, it's interesting, you know, we've seen with, you know, how Fox News has handled this, the Weinstein Company and whatnot. But let's keep in mind that there's so many women who experience this in day-to-day life that's outside of Hollywood or the big New York news studios.
Right.
You know, there are women who teach in schools who experience this, women who are bus drivers who experience this. I mean, it's all over the place. And so this helps to highlight it in those spheres, but I hope that it also provides a greater awareness in other instances.
The other thing that you'll be talking about, and as we have to wrap up our conversation, unfortunately, but I'm...
Oh, no!
I know. I wish you...
Yeah.
you have to come back. The fact that... I mean, obviously, race is such a part of this. And when you look at racial issues, including choice versus access and privilege, these are often overlooked stories, and And organizations like yours and the wonderful people that you bring into the that you teach and you educate and set out into the world to tackle these issues, but the fact that we have to make that connection more as to race and what is available
absolutely.
To us.
No, this is absolutely right. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, what Black women endured in slavery in the United States, you know, the rapes, the sexual abuse, the unpaid labor, and so much more. In contemporary terms, what this means is that women who are poor, Black, white, Asian, Latina, they suffer under enormous constraints and stereotypes. We have, through Title X, which is a government program to provide family planning for them, there are ways in which in the current administration that's been placed at jeopardy. Welfare reform has meant stigmatization of poor women who want to take care of their children. The criminalization of poor women who are threatened with arrest for so-called threatening their pregnancies, and those include instances of women being locked up in jail for falling down steps during pregnancy, charged with first-degree murder for attempting suicide while pregnant, being threatened with arrest for refusing a C-section. I mean, these are the kinds of issues that I think are really important to address and that most people would not know are happening in the country. In Alabama alone, just in the last few years, there have been over 500 women who've been arrested and charged with endangering a child, but it's really because they were pregnant. In all of those cases, that was not child abuse of a child. It was women who were pregnant and prosecutors going after them for endangering their pregnancies. Well, you know, the question is raised, well, how far does that go? You know, a lemon soda could trigger labor. Is it that poor pregnant women shouldn't drink lemon soda? I mean, where do you draw these lines? I mean, refusing a C-section, which may be better for a woman's health. Why should a woman be faced with possible arrest because she wants to have a natural childbirth? And these are not isolated cases in the United States. This is happening throughout our country, and these are the kinds of issues that we should all be concerned about.
Michelle Goodwin will be speaking at the Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood's Women's Leadership Circle Luncheon, which takes place tomorrow. She will be the featured speaker. You can find out all about it by going to uhpp.org. Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, it's uhpp.org. Michelle Goodwin, an honor having you on the program.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for your wonderful work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, uhpp.org for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.